Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The man responsible for killing at least 93 people in Norway on Friday makes his first appearance in court. Nancy Pelosi wants to probe Congressman David Wu. And Washington authorities are looking for a coyote who has a jar stuck on its head.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, July 25th, 2011. Well, our favorite tiger-suited congressman, David Wu, is in a bit of a kerfuffle again. He's calling a published report about an alleged unwanted sexual encounter with a young woman very serious. But he has not yet said whether the accusation is actually true. The Oregonian reports that a young woman from California has accused the Democrat of an unwanted sexual encounter last November. The newspaper said the information came from sources who wanted to remain anonymous. He issued a one-sentence response on Friday. He said, "This is very serious, and I have absolutely no desire to bring unwanted publicity, attention, or stress to a young woman and her family." Eric Dory, Wu's spokesman, refused to elaborate on the statement on Saturday. Eric Dory, one of the few people that apparently are still working for David Wu. He said the seven-term congressman may have more to say during the day today. Meanwhile, House of Representatives Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi called for an ethics probe late yesterday into David Wu. "I call on the Ethics Committee to initiate an investigation into the allegations against Congressman Wu," she said in a statement. "With deep disappointment and sadness about this situation, I hope that the Ethics Committee will take up this matter." Congressional sources said that her decision came after people close to Wu floated the possibility that he would not resign, but would instead announce that he would not seek re-election. These sources told KGW that in conversations with Wu on Saturday, Pelosi and other Democratic leaders expressed disappointment in what he had done and that they hoped he would, quote, take appropriate measures.
That just means it's
sounds like they're suggesting he commits suicide.
It's like Sollozzo at the end of Godfather 2, where he says, "Mike, what am I supposed to do?" And Mike says, "Well, you know," and then the next thing you do is cut to him in a big red bathtub.
Not that I'm suggesting that that's what David Wu should do, but I'm saying it is analogous to that. I think I mentioned that I had a friend of mine who shall remain nameless who worked for David Wu about a year and a half ago. And, I mean, he didn't just come out and say that he was flat-out nuts, but he did say that everybody at the office walked around on just the most delicate kind of thin ice. Just the, there was just a sense that he was constantly on this sort of mental eggshell that separated him from complete and total psychotic collapse.
Well, what I believe, and I haven't looked up that, but I wasn't there a thing a few years ago where he was accused of having raped a woman in college? And that never went anywhere.
Well, I think there was some allegation that I think just dissipated.
Yeah.
I think just vanished into the air. And I always assume that a certain amount of that just comes because if you're anybody who's powerful or celebrity at all, there's always going to be crazies coming out of the woodwork or whatever.
But yeah, no, so the, yeah.
So this is, I'm disappointed, by the way, that during the whole story about this alleged inappropriate sexual advance, you didn't find an excuse to go, rawr.
Well, I'm
Tiger.
Tiger.
With the suit and the hey, and the look at me, I'm David Wu.
Yeah. Rawr. That would be awesome, though, if the unwanted encounter happened while he was wearing the tiger suit. And by awesome, I mean horrible for the woman involved, but well, entertaining for the rest of us.
Yeah, that matters. That matters less to us.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, July 25th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Coming up later on this hour, you got your Science on the March, also entertainment news, and next time with the Rick Emerson radio program. That is Rick Emerson. RickEmersonShow.com, rather, is the website for that. We're going to be talking to Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. We'll also have a recap of last night's True Blood and a recap of last night's episode of Breaking Bad, Season 4, Episode 2. That is last night. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
So the story in Norway, where at least 93 people were killed Friday in a bombing and shooting rampage, continues to develop. Today, the man arrested in Norway made his first appearance, and the country, which is struggling to come to terms with what happened, held a moment of silence. Police say that we went on. At first, people were saying that 8 people died because of the explosion. 68 people died on the island, bringing the death toll to 76. Police later corrected the previous estimate to 93. Anders Behring Breivik, the man arrested in connection with the bombing and the shooting, made his first court appearance today. The AP reports that the judge took the unusual step of holding the arraignment behind closed doors without the public or reporters present. After the arraignment, Judge Kim Hager issued a televised statement saying Breivik had acknowledged carrying out the bombing in Oslo and the shootings on the island of Utøya, which I think it's pronounced.
Sure.
I don't know. In which at least 93 people were killed, but he pleaded not guilty. He said his organization had 2 more cells, a statement that Norwegian authorities.
Wait, so he said he did it, but he pled not guilty?
Yes.
Is that just some sort of a legal technicality?
He believes he needed to carry out the act in order to save Norway and Western Europe from cultural Marxism and Muslim takeover.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so he said the object of his actions was to give a signal to the people. The Labour Party has failed the country, he said, and the people and the price of their treason is what they had to pay yesterday. The operation was not to kill as many innocent people, but to give a signal that could not be misunderstood, he said.
So he kind of pled guilty, but not bad.
Right. Guilty, but not really my fault.
Not in the really inappropriate way. But
yeah.
I mean, okay, all right.
Right.
Hey, you know, can I just say that I was where was I looking the other day? Do you know there's a billboard on the way back? Like, if you're coming back from Fry's Electronics, have you seen that billboard that just says Obama administration in huge letters, and then it's just got a gigantic Grim Reaper?
Yes, I did see that.
What is up with that?
I don't know.
There's not even any explanation given. It's kind of disappointing.
I know. I was on the freeway with Patrick, actually, about last week sometime, and we saw that, and Patrick just went, "What the hell?" And I looked up, and I was like, "What the hell?"
Yeah.
And we just looked at it, and he goes, "What is it? What does that mean?" I said, "I don't know."
It's just a big cloaked scythe, a guy with a scythe holding a...
Somebody just wants to let you know his feelings on Obama are... Very specific,
well,
I guess.
And there's some website listed at the bottom, but it's in very, very tiny print, and you can't really see what it is. I mean, it says, you know, .org.
Which kind of defeats the point of having a billboard.
Yeah. So if anybody knows what that is, you got to hook a brother up, because I'm desperate to know. Anyway, so the guy in Norway,
right.
And you were noting before we went on the air this morning that the news just keeps saying Norway, because it's just one of those countries that's full of umlauts and Z's.
Right.
And
they don't want to have to pronounce the name of this town that has one of those O's with the line through it in the middle.
It's Fjordsgård or
something. So I spent like so much time this morning Googling pronounce Utoya.
Right.
How's it? Watching news stories and trying to hear someone say it, and all the news people just keep saying Norway, Norway. No one wants to even attempt to pronounce any of this stuff. They just keep saying Norway. Like, it's all just, like, it's the size of, you know, Pioneer Courthouse Square, and so everything had to happen in just one spot.
To be honest, I have no idea how big Norway is. Norway could be the size of a coffee table. Mm. I mean, it could be the size of Kansas, could be the size of Australia.
I'm fairly sure it's larger than a coffee table, because I think they make coffee tables there.
Well,
so
are they assembled there?
You'd have to be able to fit at least one coffee table inside of Norway.
Fair enough. Unless they just make the legs and put them in a box.
That's
true. And then the top goes into a box.
Yeah.
Where is,
then you shove it across the border and then make it
into Sweden.
Right.
Where is Norway?
I don't know.
Okay. See, so I feel better now because I don't know where Norway is either.
It's up there somewhere.
I just, in the mental map of my head, I just look and I just see a guy riding a polar bear wearing a Viking helmet. And that's it. You know, like in a Goldschlager ad or something. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, did you want to hear the man on the street stuff about the,
yes.
the shooting?
Okay. Yes, I do.
Well, this witness in Norway says there were a few hundred people in the parking lot where guns were pulled out.
Is this a shooting?
Yes.
Now, is this the right story?
No, that's a different story. That's a different shooting. That's
excellent. You're listening to Legion of
so many
News.
Shootings.
It's a news legion here at Cascadia.fm.
I just saw shooting, and I went, oh, okay, shooting.
You assumed it must be in Norway. Who's making assessments now?
I know.
That's right, racist. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news, Science on the March. Also, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you'd like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Many boaters were surprised to learn that rules have changed along the Willamette River as the sunshine brought them out in full force this weekend in the Portland metro area. The Multnomah County Sheriff's Marine Patrol was pulling up to boat after boat, warning people about two new no-wake zones. They're located near the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, where TriMet is building a new transit bridge, and along the Holgate Channel. Temperatures in the 80s both Saturday and Sunday enticed an especially large number of water recreationists to area rivers. More were expected next week as well. Signs and buoys warned boaters to slow down to 5 miles an hour, but not everyone paid attention to it. Wakeboarder Steve Wilson said, "I've had quite an education today. It used to be a great place to wakeboard and ski, but now not so much anymore."
This may be the only day of great education that Steve Wilson has, in fact, ever had.
I think he says, like, now it's all ruined. Because, like, he went out, like, yesterday, and a Marine Patrol guy said, you can't do that right here.
My whole life is without meaning.
Sergeant Travis Gulberg with the Multnomah County River Patrol said, "The biggest concern is for people working in this area on the project, especially if they are on the water. Because they could get splashed."
Okay.
Along with the no-wake zones, boaters and wakeboarders had another major obstacle to deal with. There were far more swimmers in the water than usual Sunday because of the Selwood to St. John's Bridge swim. Oh, my God.
Who in the name of Christ? Okay.
Who encourages people to actually get in that water?
To swim to St. John's, no less. What the hell is that about?
It's a super fun sight, people.
Yeah. Nah, just swimming in poo.
Organizers said they got complaints about recreational boats coming too fast and too close to the swimmers.
Also about lesions on their skin.
Thankfully, there were no reports of anyone getting hurt.
Also, I reek of day-old feces for some reason. I can't quite figure out where that's coming from.
And my hair is melting off.
Jesus
God.
Christ almighty. All right, you're listening to Legion of News here. I hope my whole house was a no-wake zone this morning. Let me just tell you. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. I got here this morning, and just as you, just as I was walking in, you said, "Are these your headphones?" And you went to hand me those headphones, and I said, "No. Those are Sarah's. I won't be needing those. I've got my own headphones today." Okay. And then the irony is, I went and I put on my actual headphones, and the minute I put them in, the right earphone shorted out.
It's as if I knew.
And so now I am, in fact, wearing Sarah Dillon's her old earphones. So there you go. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Two suspects wanted in connection to a home invasion, burglary, assault, and attempted murder in Meade, Washington, are now in custody. According to authorities, Gary L. Hutchins, 29, and Cecilia Rocha, 19, negotiated to rent a room from a Meade resident on July 11th. Later that night, the couple returned to the home armed with baseball bats and a pistol. They used zip ties and duct tape to restrain the homeowner's 13-year-old son, Caleb. The boy says the suspects took him around his house looking for valuables, then carried him to the basement, tied him to an exposed wall stud, and placed something over his head.
You're not going to find any valuables in Meade.
I don't even know where that is. I don't think I've ever even heard of Meade.
It's like looking for valuables in Omak. You're just not going to find any there.
The boy's father, Jeremy Clark, says that when he returned home, the suspects immediately attacked him with the baseball bats. He says he has 8 head wounds, broken ribs, and an injured knee. Downstairs, Caleb managed to break 3 free. He crawled through the basement window and ran to his neighbor's home. That's when Dean Powell, who I believe is the neighbor, says he grabbed 2 decorative swords and ran over to help, but he was immediately struck in the head with a bat when he entered the home. Both suspects ended up fleeing in the woods.
Okay.
So as we know, baseball bat versus decorative sword, bat wins.
Somebody asked if they were just trying to see how many crimes they could commit in one sitting. You know, just sort of, you know, like in one fell swoop, exactly how many laws they could break.
Yeah, they took a break to smoke a little crack, and then he whored her out to a guy.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Remind me to make an observation next hour about, well, I'll just write it down to myself. I have something, this reminds me about the...
Then they tore the tag off one of those mattresses.
This reminds me of something having to do with last night's episode of Breaking Bad.
I assume you have many things to say about Breaking
I do.
Bad.
I do indeed. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Hello to you. So forth. Here is Don Taylor with more news of things.
Well, if you were conscious this weekend, even remotely, you're probably aware that singer Amy Winehouse died. She was found dead Saturday at a Camden Square home in northern London.
Are we still saying the cause of death is unknown?
They are saying that because the results of her autopsy aren't expected to be released till tomorrow, but police are saying that they found no suspicious circumstances. So at least we're saying that she wasn't murdered.
Is this, well, not by anybody else. Is this just one of the situation where you're trying to figure out which of her organs surrendered first?
I think so.
Where finally her heart just goes, I've had it.
Yeah.
Screw this.
Police confirmed the identity of the 27-year-old singer who rose to fame with a powerful musical cocktail of jazz, soul, and pop influences.
Cocktail.
Yes.
Yes. This is the best soundbite ever because it's completely non sequitur.
Well, yeah, I was going to say many celebrities have spoken up on the singer's behalf. Actor and comedian Russell Brand, for example, wrote a long blog post about her, which was actually really interesting and really well written. Here we have actor Val Kilmer.
Uh-huh. The first person you think of.
Yeah. Val Kilmer speaking about Amy Winehouse.
The thing about addiction that I learned from playing a bunch of these guys that are addicts is that it's not wrong or bad to want to get out of the pain of mortality. That's what we're trying to do.
Val Kilmer, interviewed at a laundromat, yes. Ladies and gentlemen. All right, so there you go. And this is all true. By the way, I think the number of entries on the Facebook, because I put a little Facebook post up about this on Saturday?
Sure. I don't know.
I didn't even know.
The whole weekend is kind of a blur for me. I really don't know.
I didn't even really see the story until sometime after. In other words, I learned about it before I ever read a story because I got a voicemail or an email from our friend Seamus. And the email just said, I wish I had it in front of me, but the email just said, quote, now she'll never go to rehab. No. And I immediately thought, well, that's the kind of email I like to get because then it's the joke and the story all at once.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's I don't have to go to 2 separate sources for my information and my comedy. They were all together, and so I put something up on Facebook about the because she's another like 27 club member.
Yeah.
And so I think we've now heightened. I think we've now gotten to I think 10 people in that.
It's I was wondering what it is about that particular number though. I was talking to my husband about that. Maybe we can talk about that in the next hour.
It's a juju, Dom.
It's a well, yeah. I just have a specific reason for asking.
Okay,
but
should we wait till next hour?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. Breaking Bad, 27 Club.
Okay.
Awesome, I'm on it. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A young coyote is eluding animal control officers in Seattle, even though its head is stuck in a jar. The Seattle Times reports that animal shelter officers tried to track down the 3 to 4 month old pup Friday in the woods of the Rainier Beach neighborhood. But even without eating for a while, the pup had enough spunk to scurry away. Seattle Animal Shelter Supervisor Ann Greaves said officers are concerned for the pup because its head has been stuck in a jar for about a week. Graves said shooting the coyote with a tranquilizer remains an option, but it's dangerous if the animal hasn't had any food. You're telling me. She says the dose could be too much for a weakened animal. So if you're in the Seattle area and you see a young coyote with its head stuck in a jar,
take advantage, because this is your chance to point and laugh.
Right. Right.
Really, you can never do that any other time.
No.
Tear your lungs out.
Coyotes will damage
you. They'll kill you. Kill
you
dead.
Now you can mock them mercilessly.
That's right. Eat a sandwich really loudly nearby.
You hungry? You hungry, coyote?
That's right.
Look, I got some Oreos.
Who menaces sheep now? You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. A little bit from now, we'll get your science on the march, also your entertainment news, and cha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Here's Don Taylor.
Mitt Romney leads the current GOP presidential field comfortably at the moment, nearly doubling the support of his closest challenger, Michelle Bachmann, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll. But Romney's standing, as well as the rest of the field, could easily change with the entry of Sarah Palin. Without Palin, Romney polls at 30% to Bachmann's 16%, but should Palin jump into the race, she would garner 18% of the vote, bringing Romney down to 26% and Bachmann down to 12%. The Alaska Republican also scores higher than all of her potential GOP rivals on the question of who best represents the core values of conservatives, according to this poll. And she leads the pack among voters without college degrees.
You and I don't have college degrees, by the way. Just FYI.
No, we don't. But at least,
just saying, let's not.
I just find that kind of hilarious.
Let's not broadly malign people without college degrees, Don Taylor.
I just find that funny. The new poll underlines Palin's continued viability as a possible presidential candidate, despite her efforts to keep everyone guessing about whether or not she's actually going to enter the race. The poll, conducted this past weekend, also comes at a time when the Palin media blitz has relatively waned. The survey, however, also highlights the vulnerabilities of Romney. In particular, the Republican frontrunner continues to struggle for support among the energized members of the Tea Party. Moreover, Romney could face trouble in Iowa, which holds the crucial first caucuses of the primary season in a Real Clear Politics composite. That's apparently the name of an actual like website or something. Real Clear Politics, all one word.
What Real Clear Politics does is they aggregate existing polls. So they take five or six of the most respected polls and they try to aggregate them into one poll of polls, as they call it.
It's still a terrible name.
I'm sorry?
It's still a terrible name. Real Clear Politics.
I'll pass your concern along to them.
Thank you very much. Anyway, in their composite of the latest Iowa polls, Bachmann leads the field with 27% support and Romney is roughly 5 points behind her. And I was listening to something on the radio this weekend, actually, and they were saying that the whole thing with David Wu, actually, whether or not he's going to resign or stay in office and just not run again, is actually of great concern to the Republicans in Oregon. Because, and I may be getting this wrong, of course, but apparently if he resigns, then there's this whole statute that says the Democrats then get to, like, pick who the next, like, incumbent and the person who runs it. It's not like an open field
right,
like it would be if he just doesn't. So the Republicans are concerned because if the Democrats actually pressure Wu to resign instead of writing out the rest of his term, then they get to, like, pick who the next candidate's going to be.
Yeah.
And that makes it a much, much stronger race for the Democrats.
Yeah, the American legal system is full of things like that. For example, here's a question. What happens if the president-elect dies before taking office? So we have the election. Let's say that it's this coming year, 2012. You know, so-and-so is elected president, no matter who it is elected president, then dies before taking office. Who becomes president?
Is that one of the things where the Speaker of the House gets it or something?
No, there's no one. No, there is. The Congress can pick literally anyone on earth.
Oh.
They can pick anybody who is qualified to be president. They can pick anybody who is American citizen, 35. They could pick you.
Ooh, that would be a bad idea.
Doesn't have to be the vice president. Doesn't have to be anybody else who ran. They can pick anybody who is constitutionally qualified to be president to fill the gig.
Hmm.
So it's just one of those things the founders never thought. Whenever they talk about the Constitution being the supreme owner's manual for the country and how it doesn't need to be changed or altered or fixed or whatever, there's whole sections of the Constitution that don't. You know, the legal and electoral system that don't, not even that they don't make any sense, they were just never written. Just huge, big blanks where stuff like that ought to be, such as this. So there's no mechanism in place for really electing anybody to replace David Wu should he resign. So in a vacuum, what happens is the party just gets to pick his replacement,
yeah.
Which probably they they would quite like at this point.
I think that's why Nancy Pelosi and a bunch of Democrats have been sitting down with David Wu and having talks with him.
I wonder if they're just going to start doing like a lot of construction right outside his office, you know, and just making sure that there's like always a slight water leak just kind of dripping onto his desk while he's trying to work. And maybe just like one of those air horns that just goes off every now and again down the hall.
They put the loud copying machine like right outside his door in the hallway.
You just see a guy walking into the building with a big bag of spiders.
Everyone comes to work one day in a tiger costume.
Exactly.
And no one says anything
we
about
should
it.
Totally, we should be selling these ideas. We shouldn't be giving these away. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do some science.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609 via telephone or online at squireselectric.com. You can also find them at facebook.com/squireselectric if you'd like to do so. While you're there, you can press the like button if you would, and you can read some unsolicited testimonials from folks who've had Squires Electric come to their homes and deal with whatever their electrical issues might be, whether it's installation, repair, upgrade, whether it is making sure they pass an upcoming inspection, whatever that might be. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric, and they are proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
The cost of prescription medications used by millions of people every day is about to plummet. The next 14 months will bring generic versions of 7 of the world's 20 best-selling drugs, including the COP2, cholesterol fighter Lipitor, and blood thinner Plavix. The magnitude of this wave of expiring drug patents is unprecedented. Between now and 2016, blockbusters with about $255 billion in global annual sales will go off patent. This is from Evaluate Pharma Limited, a London research firm. Generic competition will decimate sales of brand name drugs and slash the cost to patients and companies that provide health benefits. Top drugs getting generic competition by September of 2012 are taken by millions of people every day. Lipitor alone is taken by about 4.3 million Americans, and Plavix by 1.4 million. Generic versions of big-selling drugs for blood pressure, asthma, diabetes, depression, high triglycerides, HIV, and bipolar disorder are also coming out of patent. The flood of generics will continue for the next decade or so as about 120 brand-name prescription drugs lose market exclusivity. Joel Auerbach, a chief pharmacy officer for Excellus Blue Cross, said, "My estimation that at least 15% of the population is currently using one of the drugs whose patents will expire in 2011 or 2012. Those patients, along with businesses and taxpayers who help pay for prescription drugs through corporate and government prescription plans, collectively will save a fortune. That's because generic drugs typically cost 20 to 80% less than brand names. Doctors hope the lower prices will significantly reduce the number of people jeopardizing their health because they can't afford the medicines they need."
It'd be good to know that the people who are bipolar and crazy will be able to get their drugs more cheaply.
Yes. What? Huh? What?
Nothing. Something in my throat. A little what? Celery.
A new metal sponge contracts in the presence of a magnetic field, squeezing out molecules absorbed when the magnetic field was absent. Scientists in Japan and Singapore embedded nanoparticles of cobalt and palladium in a carbon-sulfur skeleton. This structure soaked up loads of nearby things, in this case nitrogen, until the team exposed the sponge to a magnetic field. Then the metal nanoparticles became irresistibly attracted to each other, and the sponge contracted, expelling its contents. I have no idea what good use that would be on Earth.
No idea we're talking about.
But it is fascinating.
None. Zero.
They made a sponge out of nanoparticles, and then when it's near an electronic field, it squeezes, and then all of the other particles that are trapped in it get squoze out.
Well, it's a sponge, of course.
Yeah. I don't know what you'd
you
use
You squeeze
it.
A sponge and right. stuff inside it goes...
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what that
All right.
is.
That's great.
The Come Hither perfume released by male sea lampreys could help researchers track the invasive fish, which threaten native fish populations throughout the Great Lakes. Even with suction cup mouths, saw-like teeth, and a proclivity for blood sucking, sea lampreys still manage to get a lot of action. Female lampreys can't resist a compound known as 3KPZS, which males release when they are ready to mate. Minute quantities of 3KPZS are detectable in the water of infested streams during spawning season, according to scientists. The finds suggest that the scent may be useful for conservation management. I'm assuming then they can lure them and then get rid of them.
So they could simulate it in
yes.
some way. They could synthesize it and
yes.
then put it down like some sort of a trail leading to their doom.
Yes. Stephen Koenig and his colleagues at the University of Colorado Boulder have been working with a substance called graphene, a sheet of carbon that is only one atom thick. It's also unusually sticky. The energy required to peel it from a surface is 10,000 times that of a typical micromechanical structure. They calculated carbon's ability to adhere by covering holes in a piece of silicon oxide with graphene patches, using gas to increase the pressure inside the holes, and then measuring the shape of the patches blistering outward.
Are we still in the same story?
No.
Okay.
This is a different story.
All right.
This is about a sheet of carbon that's only one atom thick.
This is not about lampreys.
No.
Okay.
And it's very, very sticky. And I don't know what you'd do with that either. They
blah,
keep
blah,
telling
blah.
Me that they're making these things, and then they don't tell me what you would use them for.
No, there's no...
That annoys me.
I figure the practical application of this is either something that we wouldn't understand or something that is being withheld from us because it would terrify us.
A fingerprint is all you need to determine whether someone is under the influence of drugs. Paul Yates from Intelligent Fingerprinting, a company spun out of the University of East Anglia in Norwich, which I believe is in England, he and his colleagues have developed a handheld device that police can use to detect breakdown products from drugs excreted through sweat pores in the fingertips. The device applies gold nanoparticles coated with antibodies to a fingerprint. The antibodies stick to any antigens on specific metabolites in the fingerprint. Fluorescent dyes attached to the antibodies will highlight the presence of these metabolites. The technique was first used to detect nicotine, but it now works on a range of drugs, including cocaine, methadone, and cannabis. It's hard to prove that someone is driving on drugs, for example, says Yates, because existing tests are invasive, can be contaminated, and aren't sensitive enough. This new device could detect nanograms of metabolites in minutes. The device was announced at the UCL International Crime Science Conference in London.
So if you were to take Keith Richards' fingerprint and look at it, you might be able to deduce that he was, in fact, under the influence of drugs of some kind.
In fact, since all of the nanoparticles will glow from the fluorescence and stuff, it might actually blind you if you look directly at it.
It's like staring into the heart of the sun.
Oh, my God!
Someone says on Twitter, I love the Science of the March segment more than I love air itself. Thank you.
That's nice.
So forth. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. This is your Science on the March segment. Are we continuing that, or are we wrapping it up?
That's probably plenty of science.
All right, excellent. There you go. That is your Science on the March.
Don't want to oversaturate people.
No, of course
with the
not. No. You got to leave them wanting more. Brought to you by Squires Electric or SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also locate them at via the telephone at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Quite possibly Ryan White from The Oregonian, depending on how his schedule is unfolding. We'll also recap last night's episode of Breaking Bad and last night's True Blood. That is all coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
The Reed Park Zoo in Tucson, Arizona. Here we go. An apprentice who worked at the Reed Park Zoo in Tucson, Arizona, officials said was responsible for two giraffes eating leaves from a deadly plant and which killed one of them, has resigned. The apprentice said he is horrified and devastated by his mistake. Zoo officials said the apprentice accidentally mixed the leaves of an oleander plant with leaves from other plants and fed them to the giraffes. Oleander can be deadly if eaten by animals. Watoto, the zoo's only male giraffe, died July 19th after eating the toxic leaves. Zoo administrator Susan Bassford said, We have apprentices here at the zoo, and that person was not as experienced. It was a mistake compounded by a mistake, and it's horrible. Zoo officials did not release the name of the apprentice, but said he was part of a 12-month program run by the Reed Park Zoological Society. His apprenticeship was due to expire in September. Zoo officials said it was the apprentice's decision to resign. He resigned on his own, said Nancy Schlegel of the Zoological Society. When asked if the zoo tried to talk him out of resigning, Schlegel said no. Officially, the apprentice was studying to become a zookeeper, and he's distraught about what happened. It's hard to see a young person having to go through that as well as the tragedy that all of us are feeling, said Schlegel. Even though the zoo said it was an accident, it's still investigating what went wrong. Yes, zookeepers are aware that oleander trimmings are toxic, said the education curator, and then asked if they would ensure the public that nothing like this would ever happen again. The curator said, I would like to say yes. I've been here 15 years and nothing like this has ever happened before. As for the other giraffe who ate the oleander, the giraffe whose name is Denver is stabilized and improving. The other two giraffes, Texas and Eleanor, did not eat the leaves, and they are on
Texas display. And Eleanor.
Texas and Eleanor.
It's just adorable. There's no other description for it. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up later on this hour, you get your entertainment news, and you can get this program via iTunes later on this hour. You can get this program later on today via iTunes if you like. Coming up later on this hour, you get your entertainment news. You can also download it as a direct MP3 file here from Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
You're like Michael Winslow today.
Did a whole rubber band thing.
A new billboard going up Monday in Indianapolis near the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is warning people that hot dogs can cause cancer. The billboard, sponsored by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, has an image of hot dogs poking out of a cigarette pack. It says, "Warning, hot dogs can wreck your health," and urges people to visit www.cancerproject.org. According to the organization, more than 1 million hot dogs were served at Indianapolis Motor Speedway last year. The group cites a statistic from the American Institute for Cancer Research that consuming about one hot dog per day increases the risk of colorectal cancer by 21%. The billboard is going up just days before masses of people fill the speedway for the Brickyard 400.
But if you consume more than one hot dog per day, it does drastically increase your chances of being named Maury and smoking a stubby cigar.
And honestly, there's a difference between eating a hot dog every day and having a hot dog when you go to the raceway to watch people drive their cars around really fast.
Exactly.
So it's kind of stupid.
That's right, Dawn. It's just caca is what it
right.
is.
Right. I say this as someone who loves her hot dogs.
Yes.
Damn it. A Whole Foods market...
You don't strike me as a hot dog enthusiast.
I enjoy a good hot dog. I do. I especially enjoy a hot dog when it's been cooked on one of those rolly things, mm-hmm. so the skin on the outside, you know, gets taut.
Right.
You get that textural thing.
Okay, fair enough. Like, I guess I just...
I prefer a good sausage, a good smoked sausage, a kielbasa, for example, but I do like a good hot dog.
I guess I'm not really...
You've seen me eat raw hot dogs, cold
well, that's
hot
true.
Dogs here.
Just out of a baggie. No,
yeah.
That's fair. I guess it's just been a long time since I've had like a decent hot dog. Mm. I mean, even like you know, like your Nathan's Famous or whatever is really not that great. I mean, in terms of you know, in a hot. Maybe I'm looking for the wrong. Maybe when I go to have a hot dog, I'm looking for more of a sausage.
See, that's the thing. Yeah, what you want to do really is go to Costco, and get one of the kielbasa sausages that they have outside the Costco. And they're really cheap and they're amazing. They're amazingly just and they serve them with those big buns that they make themselves at the Costco bakery.
Right.
And they're like $2. And they're awesome. And they're cooked on those rolly things so that they're I had a boss who was from the East Coast and he called them snappy dogs. Because apparently that's what you call them when you bite into them and you get that snap from
right.
the skin.
No, I think that's the problem is I think where most people have a reasonable and rational expectation for their hot dog. I expect it to be larger and bigger and spicier than it really is, by which I mean I expect it to be like a kielbasa. And so yeah. that's just, I'm expecting a hot dog to function as something that it's not.
And the other thing, if you want a good, spicy, really flavorful hot dog, you have to buy the really cheap, crappy ones that are made out of like lips and floor scrapings.
Yeah.
Because they add a whole bunch of other garlic and spices and stuff in it to cover up the
back. Hoof taste.
Right. Because when you get the good ones, oh, they're 100%, you know, prime beef. They're bland. They're bland and they're not very tasty. You want the ones that are full of, like, you know, jowls.
Okay.
Okay.
By the way, somebody
is... Which
is
why you get cancer.
Somebody is... Well, yeah, but it's a tasty cancer. Somebody is... look, I mean, you're a long time dead, Don, so you might as well enjoy the time when you're alive. Somebody's suggesting Otto's Sausage House on Woodstock, which is awesome, by the way. Otto's, which is on Woodstock, right in Southeast. It's by, there's the bike gallery there, and there's a plaid pantry, and then directly down the street from both of those is Otto's Sausage Kitchen, which is fantastic. And where during the summer, you can walk by and they have one of those huge, like, half-barrel Traeger grills up front,
oh,
and the
wow.
guy is just, like, smoking sausages on applewood chips all day long. It's, like, the best thing. And then there's a huge... What it like anodized steel or whatever? Just big bucket of ice water in which there are tasty beverages and iced teas of
That's
all varieties.
Lovely!
It's a fantastic place. I strongly recommend going to Otto's Sausage Kitchen.
It sounds like just a magical hot dog fairyland.
It really is. It's wonderful, and it's also I believe it's also a butcher shop. So I think you can actually go inside and get yourself some to take home. Okay.
All right.
Anyway, here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
And further in food news. A Whole Foods market employee has launched a hilarious attack on the firm with an extraordinary letter of resignation. Fed up with what he described as the fakery of the store, which he claims is more of a, quote, faux hippie Walmart than an earth and body friendly organic foods paradise, unquote. He sets about righting some of those perceived wrongs in a 2,343 word essay that he wrote to his former bosses. In the outburst, he said the firm mistreats and underpays employees, flouts its environmental responsibilities, and allows customers to abuse staff. He also labels the food, the portion sizes of which he says are shrinking, as really quite awful on average and not as healthy as advertised. In his parting shot, picked up by Gawker, the disgruntled Toronto bulk buyer, who has not been named, starts out by noting point by point how the chain does not live up to its corporate ideals. He writes, I was hired about 5 or 6 years ago. I appreciated and respected what the company and its philosophies were at that time, the core values essentially. However, it didn't take long to realize what complete and utter BS they are. He then turns his attention to individual coworkers that he addressed in turn. In one post, he says, we get it. You go to the gym. Nobody's impressed. In fact, we all just laugh at your inferiority complex. In another, he adds, for the love of God, learn to respect women. You have no idea how insulting and aggravating it is to be around someone who's so condescending to all the women you work with. Stop calling them mama. Don't refer to them as beautiful. For Christ's sake, keep all pet names off the table. You're not complimenting women. You're being open about not knowing their names and too lazy to read a name tag.
That's right, hotcakes.
Basically, the diatribe was obtained by the Gawker website after, by the way, he emailed this to every single employee of Whole Foods.
Really? How would you even find every single employee of Whole Foods?
I'm sure he must have missed a few, but I guess there is an email list somewhere. And he said, as I've said a few times, you work at a grocery store. Go ahead and relax. Also, Whole Foods will try to make you feel like they're doing you a huge favor by employing you. It's really a mutual agreement or transaction. Don't fall for the guilt trips. Call in sick if you need to, etc. There are laws in place to stop them from taking advantage of you. And if you're thinking, this is just the way it is, suck it up, you're the biggest part of the problem. I'm afraid we can't be friends.
I must shun you forever.
A Whole Foods spokesman said, we disagree with his former team member's statements, and we wish him the best of luck in his future endeavors.
Well, you know, this is one of those things where that has become more and more common because Research in Motion, which is the company that makes BlackBerry. There was a letter that was anonymously published, I don't know, but a few weeks back that has sort of made all the round of the tech circles, and it was from... He was not a former employee, but he was an unnamed middle manager at Research in Motion, and it was like an open letter to all to the co-CEOs of the BlackBerry company about everything that they're doing wrong, and it just got a huge amount of traction online. So I think this is going to be a thing. This will be a source of entertainment that provides us grins and chuckles for years and years and years to come, I think. And plus, you know that's going to give the rise to a whole different kind of a whole brand new kind of. A forensic investigation where companies are trying to find what disgruntled employee or former employee or in fact customer or patron posted some slag about them on the internet. You know, like there's that whole thing that happened like 10 years ago where companies started just making sure that they bought the name of their company followed by sucks.com. It was like DeltaAirlinesSucks.com and SafewaySucks.com because there was a whole cottage industry actually in buying those names and then selling them back to the companies, like selling them MicrosoftSucks.com because they wanted to own it so that somebody couldn't turn it into a forum for people to post their anti-Microsoft screeds. So I think this will become the next big wave of that.
I was working on my anonymous rant about the working conditions here at the Emerson News Network.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized that there's only like 4 employees.
Right.
So you'd probably be able to figure out it was me, unless I could somehow pin it on Cheryl.
And so there's only 4 of us, and I'm just busy counting money all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, that narrows it to 3.
And Bruce, you know, he's got better things to do. He's
and
got
Cheryl
bigger
would,
fish to fry.
Cheryl would have us killed.
And Cheryl would just tell you.
So it would.
Cheryl just tells you every day that she's disgruntled. She
seriously.
Wouldn't, like, save it up.
Seriously, I got an email from her over the weekend about something, which is... It's just one of those things where she has no problem just telling you, just like, and don't be a jackass about this like you are about everything else. Just do it. Like, okay, sorry. What time is it? 12:43. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program, where you can be amused for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. What one listener described as, quote, the best 32 cents he ever spent. That listener? John Baker, whose birthday is today, by the way. So,
happy birthday, John Baker.
That's one of the small... See, now, normally I would reserve these birthday greetings for the Rick Emerson Show, but see, I'm just pulling back the curtain, giving you a little glimpse of how things work behind the scenes.
He listens to this show, too.
And so he... but I'm just saying, to those who are... to those poor souls lurking on the perimeter, on the periphery, on the outside, on the edges, on the outskirts, lost, abandoned, hopeless, this is the sort of personal touch that you get every day on the Rick Emerson. Not the bad personal touch. It's the good personal touch.
No, you get a little of that, too, but again, that's going into my...
64
That's going into my anonymous email.
That's right. So you can find out more at rickembersonshow.com.
By the way, if you live here in Portland and you're not yet inconvenienced by construction and summertime nonsense and fun runs and parades trying to get around town in the warm months...
You will be.
Cars are also temporarily banned from a section of Southwest Ankeny Street. Instead, two rows of wooden picnic tables now line the street between Southwest 2nd and 3rd. The new seating area will remain in place until October 21st. Businesses that line that section of the street, which include Dan and Lewis Oyster Bar and Voodoo Donuts, pushed to close the area to cars in order to make it more friendly to people walking and biking downtown. James Martin, a Portlander who supports the plan, said, "I think anything that promotes the local businesses and allows people to come in and hang out, because there's really no place to sit in the downtown area unless you want to go to the waterfront, I think it's a great idea." And, of course, you know, the bums need more places to sit down in that part of town between Southwest 2nd and 3rd at Ankeny. They really need those picnic tables.
Picking up on your sarcasm.
Business owners made a deal to reimburse the city $5,000 to make up for lost parking meter revenue.
Okay.
The rest of us apparently can just...
we can just suck one.
We can just suck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us next hour. The Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. Also, a recap of last night's Breaking Bad and last night's episode of True Blood, which was, I'm sure, a delightful panoply of subtle and understated artistic wonders.
I actually haven't finished watching all of it yet.
I haven't finished watching Breaking Bad either. Okay. I got like 9 minutes left.
All right.
I'm sure something horrible is about to happen, though, so I'm going to watch that during the break between the two shows here. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Fantastic. Here's your entertainment news for... Wait. Yeah, there we go. It's your entertainment news for Monday, July 25th, 2011.
Actress Linda Christian, who played James Bond's love interest in the TV adaptation of Casino Royale in 1954, died Friday in Palm Desert from colon cancer. The 87-year-old is also an ex-wife of leading man Tyrone Power. They split in 1956. Christian also starred in the films Tarzan and the Mermaids and Up in Arms. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia co-stars Charlie Day and Mary Elizabeth Ellis are expecting their first child, reports Us Weekly. Day can currently be seen in the comedy Horrible Bosses. The couple married in 2006. Captain America, the first Avenger actor Chris Evans says, it's hard to feel like a sex symbol compared to Chris Hemsworth of Thor and Robert Downey Jr., who plays Iron Man, who are his co-stars in the Avengers. He said, "I don't consider myself that way. Many actors are saddled with raging insecurity, and I'm no exception. I'm drowning in it."
This is who?
This is Chris Evans.
Oh, okay. All right.
And you know something, Chris Evans? If you were working opposite Robert Downey Jr. and you weren't drowning in insecurity, there'd be something wrong with you.
Chris Evans is really generic. He's just really bland, is the thing.
He is.
I mean, so much so that when you said his name, it just fell out of my head, like, right away. And right, the thing about Robert Downey Jr. is he's got a certain kind of scruffy charm to him.
He's magical. He's like a leprechaun or something. He just opens his mouth and you just look at his face and he's magical.
Well, he's got something that you cannot teach and that you can't have medically or surgically alter, which he's just got charisma, which Chris Evans doesn't really have.
No.
But Robert Downey Jr. is a guy that just has a certain magnetism to him.
Actor Rhys Ifans, who plays the Lizard in The Amazing Spider-Man, was cited with a misdemeanor battery charge Friday evening after allegedly shoving a female security guard at San Diego's Comic-Con.
The Lizard?
Yeah.
That can't actually be the name of a real villain.
Well, it's
that seems rather lackluster.
It's capitalized.
Really?
The Lizard.
Is that just... you can't... okay.
I mean, it doesn't say a lizard, like lower caps, so it must be a character.
But I mean, don't the other villains all have names like, you know, the Green Goblin and the Red Skull and the Amazing Elastolad and the Lizard?
He's just the Lizard.
Okay.
There may have been a point where they were just running out of, you know, adverbs.
And then somewhere there was Stanley just going, "Capitalize it, that way we can trademark it."
What? We can't trademark the word Lizard?
Okay.
Yeah. A spokeswoman for the San Diego police claims Ifans was abusive, belligerent, and aggressive. Meanwhile, a Sony spokesman added that iPhones deeply regrets this incident.
By the way, I should note that this is the same company that gave us The Thing. So I guess maybe specificity isn't their strong suit all the time. That's not their superpower.
Not so much. During an appearance at Comic-Con, Steven Spielberg announced that a fourth installment of the Jurassic Park franchise will be a reality within the next 2 to 3 years. Spielberg was at Comic-Con to promote the upcoming movie The Adventures of Tintin, which I'm like
giddily
excited
for. Excited
about. I have been such a fan of that comic for so, like, God, probably since I was about 16 years old.
And I just, and I'm sorry, I missed the whole first part of the show. What was around, what's going to be around
There's
for a long time?
There's going to be a fourth Jurassic Park movie.
Here's the thing. I don't even really care about that so much. No. Like, I don't. They can prostitute Jurassic Park all they want. It doesn't bother me. It's not. I have no emotional investment in the Jurassic Park franchise. I don't think anybody does. I've never met anybody, because the Jurassic Park franchise has really nothing to do with people. Meaning, there's no. I mean, the dinosaurs are the stars of that. I mean, it's not like Indiana Jones. You know, it's not like Jaws, where the human element is really more important than the shark. The dinosaurs are the stars, and so you can't dilute that or water it down for me.
No, but still, like, Jurassic Park 2 and 3 were not.
They weren't all that good.
They weren't that good.
But it doesn't bother me. That's what I'm saying. Like, if it comes out and it sucks, like, if I happen to see it by accident and it sucks, then well, it sucked. And what's one more bad movie? If I don't ever see it, then I don't ever see it. It doesn't upset me in any way for there to be a bad, you know, or an additional Jurassic Park film.
Crazy Stupid Love actress Emma Stone, who is one of my favorite young actresses working right now, may have shed some insight on why Justin Timberlake has not done an album since his 2007 album, Future Sex / Love Sounds.
Too busy effing supermodels on piles of cocaine.
Well, in an interview, she said that she'd love to do Broadway, for example, but she barely made it through the week without losing her voice. She said, "I lose it all the time. It'd be hard to do live theater and project every night." And then she said, "I was talking to Justin about that, and he had that surgery. He was on a vocal rest for a while a couple of years ago, and I think he thought he was never going to be able to sing again. He couldn't sing for a year, he said, and it was scary."
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, almost everybody loses. Anybody who's a professional singer runs the risk of losing their voice, and most people at some point have to have, like, nodule or polyp removing surgeries.
Yeah, and that's
surgeries.
Apparently what it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think the number of people that have that happen that we don't necessarily know about would be staggering. Never mind. I was just going to tell a stupid Bon Jovi anecdote. And really, what's the freaking point?
Kid Rock is considering vetting the strippers that promoters hire to join him on stage at shows a little bit more closely, because some of them are a little, quote, shaky close up. The rap rocker invites venue bosses to find the best local talent in strip bars and ask them to perform alongside him. But he says he's often shocked by the ladies gyrating and dancing around him. He told Rolling Stone magazine, "We actually need to devise a better system, because night to night, it's pretty effing shaky. There are certain nights when I'm like, wow, what the F?"
I don't understand. What is it that's shaky about them, so to speak?
Well, I think he means that they're kind of like, he's not getting the higher quality strippers that he would like,
well,
is what he's saying.
That
he's leaving it up to the club owners to get strippers for him, and maybe they're not bringing him the best talent in town.
Well, maybe the club owners are judging that by a different kind of talent, maybe, is what's happening there.
Here's that too.
The thing I've learned in my trials and travails in broadcasting is you don't ever want to leave anything up to club owners or strip club owners, because they're just the flakiest people on earth. Strip club owners are, in fact, strip clubs and bars are the only two businesses, in my experience, that are ever required to pay in advance for advertising at radio stations. Everybody else is sort of good for it, you know, they bill them 30 or 60 days later. Strip club owners, adult businesses, bars, they always have to pay in advance because they're just jackasses. All of them, and they never have any idea what they're doing, and they're just useless. And so it would not surprise me if maybe they were being judged by some slightly different standard. You know who else? Here's a strange thing. You know who else actually recruited strippers to perform at his show a few years ago? And I know because
Sir Richard Burton.
You would never guess. Because I actually was responsible for this. Is a true story.
Weird Al Yankovic.
It was Weird Al Yankovic.
Really?
He didn't specifically say strippers. I forget exactly how the conversation happened, but it was, I don't think it was him personally, it was like his road manager or whatever, and they were like, we need a couple of dancers, and she did that thing of arching the eyebrow, sort of like, Weird Al Yankovic doesn't like to publicly just ask people to round up strippers to dance on stage. I mean, they weren't doing anything untoward, but it's like, I think everybody knows the deal, that if you want if you're going to get somebody who's like a trained performer and a trained, you know, someone who is trained in dance or ballet or whatever, they might be difficult to find, or there might be some sort of financial incumbency upon you that is untenable. However, if you get, you know, somebody who has been doing adult or exotic dancing for a long time, they will have some sort of onstage and dancing ability, and they might also be available to bargain price. So they don't really want to ask for strippers as such, because that sounds wrong.
Plus, their schedule is probably more flexible.
That's the thing. And so, but they kind of know where their bread is buttered. Yeah. So she said that thing of, so we need to get a couple dancers. And then she kind of arched an eyebrow at me to perform during a couple of the numbers during Al's set. Do you know any ladies like this? And
you said, do I?
Do I ever? And so there was actually a friend of mine and her girlfriend who performed at one of the local clubs in Salt Lake City who went up and did, who performed behind Al at his show, including the, so like if you were there and you saw the, this, at the, like, if you were at the Horticultural Center in 1996 and you saw Weird Al Yankovic perform when he did Smells Like Nirvana, for example, the girls come out dressed as cheerleaders and they dance behind him, and that's who that was. So I haven't been, here's the thing about strippers. I think they're a vital part of the service industry in ways that we can't possibly imagine or you know, enumerate. I think really they are, they're a vital part of our national economy. There you go.
That's all and, the entertainment.
Really? Are we done there? All right. There's your entertainment news. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. We got like 3.5 minutes here.
Okay, well, here in Portland, police officers used a taser to subdue a man they said was coming at them with a pellet gun. Portland police said Christopher Phillips, 50, was found at Northwest 6th and Cooch just before 5:30 p.m. lying on the ground, bleeding from the mouth and holding a handgun. Responding officers said Phillips started to get up and turn toward them, refusing commands to stop. So they used a taser weapon to subdue him. They determined he had been holding a pellet gun. And I would just like to say kudos to the Portland police for being not being immediately shooty.
Which I would be,
because
completely.
He was holding what they thought was a handgun. And Portland police is already getting a reputation for, like, just gunning people down for carrying, like, you know, screwdrivers and stuff. So they would have probably actually been within their rights to just shoot this guy. But they went to the taser.
And I think we actually would have, completely been behind them if they had. I mean, really, a guy has what looks like a gun. You just light his ass up. I think we can all agree that that's a case where the guy had it coming.
But I think this is an indication that we are seeing some administrative changes in the way things are done here in Portland. Investigators said Phillips had been assaulted in a possible drug-related fight, and that's why he was lying on the ground. They said he also had a crack pipe in his possession. He was taken to the hospital and cited for disorderly conduct and attempted possession of a controlled substance.
Does that mean he was attempting to buy drugs, but it turned out to it was like a sting operation? Did you say?
No, he was just apparently he was just lying on the ground, bleeding from the mouth, and holding a gun. And somebody had called the cops and said, "There's a guy with a gun, and he's bleeding, and he's on the ground." And so the cops came, and then he wouldn't like
attempted possession.
Yeah, yeah, that seems weird, particularly since he had a crack pipe. So
that's interesting.
Maybe it was an unused crack pipe, and so that we're operating on the assumption that he had purchased the crack pipe, therefore he was intending to.
Or he was around. He was in the area looking to buy drugs.
Yeah,
maybe. And but then the waving and the tasing and the hey had all happened before he was able to complete said transaction.
Yes.
We got about 90 seconds here.
Okay.
Oh, somebody asks, by the way, if you have to be over the age of 70 to be excited about Tintin.
Yes. Yes, you do. Or just some kind of a freak who reads.
Was it a comic
French
strip or a comic book?
It was a French comic. I believe it was. I don't know. I've only saw it collected in books. I don't know if it was ever a daily strip or if it was just.
This is the hero dog?
No, Tintin is the boy, and he has adventures, and then his dog's name is Snowy.
I never knew that. I swear to God that the dog's name was Tintin.
No.
Oh, I'm thinking of Rin Tin Tin.
Yes.
Well, they're not the same thing?
No, not even remotely.
How would you end up with two? How would you end up with two different adventure serials in which Tintin was the name of a character?
Well, one is French.
No, but I'm saying, what are the odds that you would ever name two people Tintin and that they would both be characters in an adventure serial? That's just weird.
I don't know. I mean, if you're here in America, you could very likely name something and not realize it's a name of something in, you know,
that would be like having
France.
Two different fictional ad characters called the Hamburglar.
Or one is just called Burglar. Except that's actually a word.
But no one's really just named Tintin.
They might be in France.
Well, I suppose that's a fair point. Okay.
Did we just use up all our 90 seconds talking about this?
Yeah, we got like 8 seconds left.
Okay.
Oh, there was Adventures of Tintin on Nickelodeon, too, says Michael in
Vancouver.
It
wasn't very good, though. It was actually kind of boring.
It was.
So the art is just beautiful in those comics, by the way, if you ever get a chance to go back and look at the adventures of Tintin.
There you go. We'll go out on that. Fantastic. And with that, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. As always, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. We thank you for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow. That is Tuesday at noon for another exciting episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?